Ja, jeg har mine guldsko.
Jeg heter Sonja, jeg har guldsko på. Velkommen til. Det er rigtig dejligt at se jer her i aften og få fuldt hus. Her i september måned, når det regner. Yes. Så velkommen til det her foredrag, det hedder Independence in Relationship. Og vi havde det samme foredrag i Højstrup Gård i tirsdags. Og det var meget, meget spændende, så ni kan glæde jer til i aften. Ni kender jo stedet alle sammen, så jeg interesserer det ikke. Men jeg vil til gengæld introducere Isabel. And I'll speak in English, then she knows what I'm saying about her. But Isabel here, she's been with Brahma Kumaris for around 20 years, and I remember there was a project called Just a Minute, where Brahma Kumaris did a big campaign that you can just change your awareness, and all it takes is a minute of meditation. Will you look, Marianne? So they talk kun et øjeblik, 1 minute to change your awareness to do a meditation. And Isabel came from Canada to manage this project. So suddenly we had an American sister who was smiling all the time in London. So that's where you moved to UK from Canada. So Isabel was brought up and lived in Canada to begin with. And Isabel's parents were Buddhists, and she's brought up in Canada, in the Christian part of Canada. Canada is quite Christian, and most of it. So she came to Brahma Kumaris like 20 years ago. She has a very interesting background and a deep understanding of many different ways to live a spiritual life. And one way is to be very easygoing and very happy in your relationship, but not dependent, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what we're going to hear about tonight. And Isabel, she has a background in business, and so combining spirituality in business, which is a very good and needed combination today. Mm. So I think that's what I say to start with, and we get going and see if we can find space for everyone. Just 1 second. You're okay and set?
Mm. Yes,
very good. Hello, welcome. We'll find another chair for you. You can sit on the floor behind your phone. And good story, yes, sir. Yeah, good story.
Okay, good evening. I'm not the oldest here, but I don't think I'm the youngest either. So my wisdom is limited, but I must say that in the last 20 years, I've definitely focused on myself and using meditation, discovered a lot of inner wisdom, inner strength, and treasures. This is what I'm going to share with you. I was brought up in Quebec, Canada, and my parents had drifted into the Eastern philosophy from a young age. I saw a picture of my brother sitting in the yoga position when he was 5, so that made me 2 years old. And so I was always interested, but I never really carried what my parents were doing. And the main reason was that I had a commitment from a very young age to be happy. That has been my addiction. That has been my benchmark. That has been what makes life worth living for me. For some people, it might be something else. It might be peace. It might be love. It might be joy. But for me, first of all, is happiness. And so when I was seeing my parents being quite serious Buddhist, It was okay, but I was not inspired. So we've had amazing conversations and everything, but what my parents taught me most of all was integrity and dignity. But I want to speak a little bit more about my parents, and that's for the reason why I've chosen the topic tonight and the journey that I've done to become independent. And yes, I lived with my parents. I've got one until I was about 18, and I have one brother. And then after that, I had my own life, flat, living arrangements. And now I live with 25 people, 24/7, and I feel more independent and more free than ever before. Interesting. And so when I understood the workings of the mind and the foundation for happiness, that's what I understood. And I understand that it can be in community or alone, the same. My mother didn't have a very good health. And so from the time I was about 8, she had, from the hysterectomy to breast tumor to brain tumor to colon cancer to many other things, osteoarthritis. She had a lot of challenges. And what happened is that her moods, she had migraine headaches. Some of you might have migraine headaches. At the end, it was almost every other day. And so when you have someone that has such sensitive health and temper, you learn to read them. You can read their emotion and their moods before they say anything. You know about that, right? Because if I was to upset or frustrate my mother, I couldn't go out. I couldn't do anything. I had to stay quiet at home. That was the deal. And so I made sure that I was stepping carefully. And as a child, you feel that you must follow the house rules. And I was made very clear to me that I lived in my parents' house, and as long as I did, I would follow their rules, not mine. I often say I'm a quadruple Aries. Any Aries in the room today? Yes? 5 times Aries, which means tend to be quite stubborn, tend to jump before I think. But if I fall, I go back up very quickly. I love newness. I love to move. And so for living with my mother, who wanted to be quiet and silent, as I said, I had to learn to read her. And I did it quite well, so much so that when I came on the working environment, I did the same thing with my co-workers and my bosses. Which means that I wanted to predict what they were thinking and expecting of me. If someone asked for my help, I would say yes, even if my work was not getting done. And it made me, after even only 3 years, working 6 days a week, completely burnt out. I wanted perfection. I didn't want to give my boss any chance to find any reason to be correcting me. And I was doing more than what was my job description. I've read an article about codependency at work, and they describe codependency at work. We often hear it with the alcoholic and the family, where there's an alcoholic in the family. You know, we talk about the dependent that become codependent, but this one, they were talking about codependency at work and describing that you can develop the same thing, putting your needs and your work second, doing what you thought needed to be done and was expecting of you first, overthinking about what the boss may want from you, and reaching or trying to go for perfection all the time. So much so that people become depressed. They feel that they are not valued. They actually feel that they are taken advantage of. Fascinating, fascinating things. And when I understood that from my childhood, my way of survival, my way of being happy, my way of being somehow free sometimes, had transposed into my working life. And I was, after 3 years, very tired. I left everything that I had. I had the chance to have worked for a startup company. You know, anyone of you has been to Quebec? Yeah, just a couple of you. You know about the Quebecers? We're a little bit like the Basques in Spain. And here I don't think you've got the same kind of crowds. We want independence. We want to be separate. We want to be different. We want to claim our culture back. And so on and so forth. And so if you have a new idea, if you want to start a new business, people will encourage you. And so I had started to work after my master's for a new company. And that new company became public. You know what that means? That my $10 became whatever, 500. And so for someone who was new on the working in the working world, that was enough money for me to take a year off. So I, after really feeling that I was drained out and completely lost, I got rid of everything that I had and I went to Spain. The reason why I'm telling you that is that it's not clear. My parents couldn't figure out what was going wrong with me because I was honest. I was someone that was open, jovial, caring. So why was I so tired and burnt out? And it's really when I went to Spain, I traveled around because someone had told me that when you're ready, the teacher emerges. Have you heard that before? You know? Start on the journey and, right, when you're ready, the teacher emerges. Well, the teacher did not emerge. And I didn't like to travel for traveling. And so I learned a language. I can't speak it anymore after 20 years of not practicing. But I learned a language and I did the pilgrimage of Santiago de Compostela. Anyone's done it?
No.
Some people want to do it.
Yes.
20 years ago, there was about 15,000 people walking it. I think now it's closer to 100,000 walking it every year. Anyway, when I embarked on that walk, it was a good time to just put myself through kind of a daily routine that was very simple. No expectations, and there was a lot of silence. So I fell in love with silence. And what really happened is that I was able to trust my intuitions. Hear it and trust it. If you've done a long walk, the first third of your time, your body adapts. The second third, your mind goes flat. Have you ever had that? You're on holiday and you can't think? It's like flat. And I tested that out. I was walking with a Frenchman. He was double my age and he was an intellectual. I said, "Do you feel the same, like not thinking?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Okay, let's try. What's the difference between respect and tolerance?" If you've tried to engage in a conversation with a French person, they can philosophize about anything and everything. We both went blank. We said, "Maybe tomorrow." "Try again tomorrow." And the mind was so quiet. And it's a very lovely feeling. However, it's not the aim. What happened the last third of the pilgrimage is there was, in that ground of silence and stillness, I could hear what I was thinking. I could hold it, and I could make a decision based on it. That was very valuable. I started meditation shortly after that, and I would say that's the main process that I use on a daily basis. Bring my mind to peace and hear the soul. And other things. So, the reason why I explain about the practice of meditation is when I look at independence, codependence, interdependence, when I look at relationships, I think life, I think day-to-day life, we are human beings and we love to relate to people. We relate with our friends, with our children, with our parents, with our neighbors, with our co-workers. And if those relationships are relationships of quality, our life brings us more happiness. Some of the studies show that only 10% of your happiness is based on what's happening in the world outside. 90% is based on how you see the world, right? How you perceive it. And your support system, the people that you hang out with, the people that you speak to, the people that you confide with, the people that you work with, the people that you speak and share with, they also support your worldview. And when you don't feel alone, interestingly enough, it's one of the bases for feeling that you belong, that you connected, and a flourishing ground or a nourishing ground for happiness. In the world today, we would say that happiness, if we don't look at those studies, happiness comes after success. If I work hard, I'll be successful. And if I'm successful, I'll be happy. You say, no, that's not my equation for life. But if I say to you, why aren't you happy today? Often say, you say, I could do better. There's so much to do. And if you, I say to you, why haven't you done it? You'll probably say, I'm not working hard enough. Or there's not enough time. Is that true? And so that's the equation that we have. However, the studies are showing that if you're able to nourish happiness within yourself first, they call it the happiness advantage. If you can develop happiness within your mind, within your heart first, you will be more productive, more creative. Actually, they say you'll be faster at diagnosis if you're a doctor. But everything that has to do with more or better or creativity is enhanced when I come from a place of happiness. Now, codependency is when I look at the other to find my value. And here I'll introduce something that will bring into place everything that I've covered so far. And I hope you can see on the board. When you start on the spiritual path, the first thing that you talk about, what is the first thing that you talk about, especially when you come here? What's the first thing that you talk when you come here? That you're a soul, right? Who are you? I am a soul. And when we talk about the self, when we talk about the I, we talk about the soul. The first thing is self-respect. The second thing is self-esteem. And the third is self-confidence. Which one would codependency be really connected with? Self-confidence? Actually, interestingly enough, those who have codependency, as I described, they become so obsessed by what their boss wants or could want, they become perfectionists. And perfectionist is, I can, and I can give you even more than what you want. Actually, if you had a scale, you'd probably not be in the balanced middle. You'd probably be here. And the I is very strong, and maybe more ego than a healthy self. And it says, I can, very strongly. Here is I can't, right? Self-confidence is all about that idea that I can, but that I can't. But in the middle is I can face whatever comes to me. That's very healthy. Would that be what is affected the most? Okay, it goes towards the wrong side, fine. But what is really the weakness? What is self-respect in comparison to self-esteem? What is self-respect? If a six-year-old was to come here and say, self-respect? What do you mean? If a 15-year-old came in the room and said to you, self-respect, can you define this for me? Mm-hmm. If a 50-year-old came, what is self-respect? Is it to stand up for yourself and make your opinion heard? That's what we often think, right?
It's feeling one's boundaries.
Feeling one's boundaries?
Know yourself.
Know yourself, right? And secondly, I know and not only know it, I've got my good bits and my not so good bits. I know it and I
am.
Accept it. Right? What would be self-esteem? Now, we often interchange those, but they mean completely different. And the one that is affected the most when we become dependent, or what makes us become dependent, is often self-esteem. This one is not strong either, but the self-esteem is the weakest. What does the self-esteem say? Here is I can, here is I know myself, and I accept myself.
Believing in yourself.
Yeah.
I'm
not good enough.
Well, that's if you're not enough, right?
Yeah.
And that one, if I've got a very boosted self-esteem.
I'm the best.
I'm the best. Yes, it is. I'm the best. Wow. Watch out. What would be a healthy self-esteem then?
I'm good enough.
Good enough is actually probably about here. You know, the element of esteem, if you esteem someone, if you have regard for someone, is that you give value to someone. Here is an aspect of knowing, accepting. Here is an aspect of valuing myself, valuing my contribution. Right? So here is I value myself, my time, my energy, my money, my contribution. So when I have a healthy self-esteem, whose opinion would I follow?
Your own.
Right? But when you are codependent or dependent, what you think of me is more important than what I think of myself. You can see. And if you do validate me, if you do appreciate me, right, then I feel good. But if you ignore me, if you forget to say thank you, if you forget to say that was so good, you know, from the chocolate cake to the big project at work, how do I feel? Yeah, I feel completely down. The dependency works a lot on the esteem. And because we often don't know the difference between the three, we mix them up. Because if I'm very dependent, as I said, at work, and I know exactly what my boss is thinking, and I can read him so well, and I'll do things before he asks me, do I have a problem of self-confidence? Not at all, right? Not at all. And so you think, I don't have a problem. But it's not an aspect of confidence. It's an aspect of esteem. And if you are to jeopardize your own needs to fulfill the needs of others, that means you don't value yourself. And to value yourself, one is you need to know yourself. That's why this one is first. When you say self, what do you think? What do you see? When you come here, of course you say the soul, right? Because you've been drilled to think I'm a soul. Fine. Self-respect would mean I respect myself as a soul. What does that mean? In practical, what would that mean? I respect myself as a soul. What do we know about the soul? One thing that you know, for example, about the soul. What do you know about the soul? What's it made of? What does it look like?
It's eternal.
It's eternal? So, that's a good example. If I start to think in my mind, I'm going to die. I don't want to go too young. I'm seeing all those people dying. And I should be really healthy. And I don't want to go into India because there's too much chances for me to be sick. And I don't want to be sick. Can you see? I can start to have, if I don't remember that I'm an eternal being, obsessed about my physical mortality and make sure that I protect or overprotect, overdo things to keep healthy, right? Am I respecting myself? I'll give another example. One of the other things that we say about the soul is peace. If I start to think negatively, if I start criticizing, if I start comparing, am I respecting myself? Just on the basis of peace, if I create peacelessness within my own mind, I'm not really accepting that I'm peaceful. I've gone completely off track. So in Raja Yoga, that's one thing I really liked, actually, is before my mother became a Buddhist, she was in Raja Yoga Patanjali, another Raja Yoga, and she went to ashrams. And I remember going to those ashrams, and as soon as you turned the corner, there was a list of things they should do and should not do. And I did not like the list of do's and don'ts. And when you come into Raja Yoga, really, when you understand self-respect and you understand that you're a peaceful soul and you start thinking negatively, if you've really tasted peace, you don't want it. You don't want those negative thoughts. So no one has to say to you, don't think negatively. It's not good. It's like you start to feel it. I don't know, you may have had that experience. When you have deep experiences of silence, deep experiences of being able to be with yourself, not really wanting the music on the television always on, has some of you experienced that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't need to, you know, even the silence when you sit with someone doesn't become uncomfortable, right? No one has told you that. But when you really taste, so to know yourself also means to experience, to be it, and to accept it, is to zone in on the things that are good for me. Now, one thing that happens for all of us is that when we start working, especially, we seem to develop a lot of personality traits that we think will make us successful, loved, accepted, efficient, productive, or whatever. We seem to mold ourselves, our personality, and to merge the things that we don't think others should see about ourselves, and bring forward all the qualities and the personality traits that we think will make us lovable, acceptable, you know, successful and productive. Is that maybe? And it can be physical. You know, I read an article of someone who was blonde and used to wear contact lenses that changed into brown with glasses to start working because she would be not she would be more trusted and more respected.
Mm-hmm.
How interesting, no? And so we may even do that. We may even change our physical appearance and the what we wear and how we, you know, we go to the gym or not go to the gym, the color of our hair and everything, right? Hide the gray hair or show the gray hair, depending on if you think that it's a plus or a minus for your career, right? What happens when we do this... We may be successful externally, maybe. But what happens inside is a complete lack of respect of the self. I'm putting my time, my energy, my love, my care, everything for an external, a personality trait. A personality trait is not me, it's something that I create. But the me feels unheard, unseen, misunderstood, and it needs validation, respect, right? It needs to be trusted, it needs to be heard. But if I spend my time developing a facade that you like and you appreciate and you validate, all my attention is on you. And inside, how do I feel over a long period of time? And I'm talking about the I, not the ego, not the created self that I think will make me successful, but the soul. How do I feel?
Empty.
Empty.
Mm-hmm.
Alone.
Mm-hmm.
Gray. Mm-hmm. Right?
Tired.
Mm. Mm. Depressed. Mm. Right? Disconnected.
Mm.
Who's done it? It's me. But I don't realize. Why? Because self-respect in society is never defined as knowing how to take care of myself as a soul.
Mm.
Never defined like this. And letting alone knowing what the soul is, and who the soul is, what it's made of, but how to care for it. How do I listen to the soul? How do I see the soul within me and in you? How do I validate the soul? Yeah, how do I trust? How do I encourage the soul? How do I do that? And when I learn to do this, and this is where meditation is very important, when I learn to do this, then I will not wait for you to do this for me. So when I create that ego, what happens is that I'm disconnecting with myself. The first thing actually that I experience is insecurity and loneliness and emptiness. And those things are breeding ground for more and more neediness. And I look outside. That's my habit. I look outside. And so I want you to make me feel full, complete, good, useful, heard, seen, right? I want you to trust me with respect. But I'm not doing it for myself. And the self, I mean the soul. Because oftentimes, we define the self as the ego. And you will say, I spend a lot of time with myself. You know, I write. You know, I've got good friends. And I do things that I love. But that is taking care of, like, the full self, the human being. But what I'm talking about is the soul, the living energy inside. And so self-esteem is to value myself. And if I've developed an ego and I've put a lot of energy to that, I want you to say, it's right. You're good. It's okay. I want more of you. I want, you know, to promote you. I want more people like you. I want to know what your, you know, secret for success is. I'm interested in you. We want to hear that, right? So, in spirituality, we say that every soul, yes, is a point of light. Every soul is eternal. Yes, every soul is peace. That's my fragrance, like the rose has a fragrance. Same with love, and same with happiness. But we all have a speciality. Do you know what your speciality is? Do you know what makes you unique? Do you know? Maybe. We think that it's being humble to say, no, I'm not special. It's not humility. It's not. Humility is, I'm accepting that I've got strengths and weaknesses. But it's not about trying to hide the beauty that I have within me. It's not. Because what makes life worth living, if you ask someone who's about to die, and people have written or people have had testimonies from people who are about to die, what do they say? What makes life worth living?
Love.
Hmm? What else?
They wish they didn't work so much their whole life.
That's it? What they wish that instead they would have?
Spent more time
with themselves.
Spent more time?
With family. And
with family. But often they also say, I wish I didn't spend my whole time trying to be what other people wanted me to be, right? And be myself. It's one of the biggest fear that we have. Isn't that incredible? To be ourselves. And so for sure we kind of set up for dependencies. Because dependency is, let's say that I spend my time to develop, like me, it was not a bad thing. I knew how to listen to my mother and I had to, you know, almost psychically figure out what she wanted and what she needed before she even thought about it. I was so in tune with her, right? So I developed that ability. Was I in tune with myself? Could I do that with myself? Not until I went on that pilgrimage, really. And I know it was not until then, because if I had a thought or I wanted to make a change in my life, I would ask friend A, friend B, friend C, friend D. And if they all said the same thing, then I might say, yeah, maybe it is a good idea. But if they didn't say the same thing, I would kind of be confused and have difficulties to find out what is it that I wanted to do. So it's neither good nor bad. It happens like this. But it made me very, very prone for dependency. If I feel insecure, for example, not because I don't think that I can do anything that comes in front of me, But the insecurity because I'm not really being myself, that insecurity, if you come to me and you say, Isabel, you're so confident since you've joined the company, well, like Sonia said, you know, you smile all the time and there's a breath of fresh air and what would I feel? Right? I'm starting a new job. I'm feeling a little bit insecure. I'm testing out my personality to see if it's going to bring me to success. And someone whispers in my ears all those wonderful things. How will I feel?
Good.
I feel so good. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. That good feeling might be joy, for example. We call it an emotion. And emotions don't come from the soul. They come from the ego. Emotion. You're being moved to joy because you told me something that makes me feel so good. And if you carry on, and if I'm having a hard time, you know when you feel vulnerable and someone carries on being so nice to me? I think joy will turn into something else. What do you think? Well, if they keep being positive to me, even when I am vulnerable, I probably will fall in love. Right? I could. Right? But is that love as a feeling that comes from the soul? Or am I being moved to love because of what you're telling me? When you're dependent, on top of that, your emotions keep being in control of you. Very difficult to be stable. If I hear the right things from you, then I might feel good. But it's got nothing to do with you. Right? Anger comes when someone comes between me and my provider of love and happiness. Right? You keep whispering those things to me for a year or two or three, and then someone else joins the company, and you whisper in her ears, what will I do? I'll be really angry. Why? Because my provider, and I think love is finished. I'm not lovable anymore, right? I can't be happy. But is it true?
No.
Is it the truth? So I really feel that when you understand true self-respect and you know how to care for yourself, how to be love, and it, I tell you, if you do it in the morning to experience that peace where you feel stable and strong, right, like the Shakti, right? You feel the spine is solid. It's supporting you. You know yourself. And then you experience all the beautiful things that are within the soul. What will happen is you will feel contentment. And contentment is the deepest form of happiness. And if you've tasted it yourself in the morning, there's a better chance, and I'm not saying guaranteed, because it can slip away, but there's a better chance that when I start to interact with you, I won't expect you to move me to happiness or joy. Because I'm stable, I'm content, I'm solid. Rather than expect you to help me fulfill my needs, I might be there for you. What brings happiness in one's lives? Think of the things that make us happy. Helping others.
Yes.
Right?
Right.
I think it's a big one. It's a really big one. And so helping others, if you're needy and you develop dependency, you may feel you're helping others, but you're compromising yourself. When you become spiritual, and you look at the self not as just the human being, but you understand the soul, you become solid, And in the morning, if you have the practice of kind of reopening the flower and letting the fragrance out and feeling contentment, you will see that in your relationship, you will be independent. Can you see?
Mm-hmm.
Not that I don't care about you, but I'm not dependent on you to move me to a beautiful place. I might move you, but it won't be transactional. I won't move you so that you move me, right? Which is a little bit what we do at the moment, right? I'm a bit transactional in our relationships. Does that make sense?
Very much.
Any questions so far? No?
What did you do after the dreaming?
Well, that's when the teacher did show up. but not in the way that I expected, right?
That's why.
Yes, that's it. But what happened is I met one Canadian on the pilgrimage. Everybody said, there's a Canadian coming. Slow down. You can meet him. And as a Quebecer, you don't really want to meet an English Canadian. And my parents had drifted from Christianity, and I thought that was pretty cool. And he'd been told by his church to come on the pilgrimage. So I was like, not sure. And he was a real gentleman, really. But at that age, I had so many preconceptions. But I knew French, I knew English, and I knew Spanish. And so as soon as he met me, he said, I met some new Spanish friends, but I can't really speak to them. Would you have dinner with us so you can help and translate? So of course I said yes. And then the second night, we would not walk together because he walked 40 kilometers a day. And if he slowed down, he would walk twice as fast as me. And so I let him walk. But it happened the second day, we were in the same refugio again. And I was walking with that Frenchman, right? And there was a group of us, but I was more connecting with him. He had done a lot of psychoanalysis, and I was digging into what he had done. And he comes in at dinner time with a tin of spaghetti, a tin of spaghetti. And as a Quebecer and a French group, we knew how to cook. So we said, forget your spaghetti. And we cooked for him. So the second night we met again, and then the third night, and then after that we lost track. But he'd said to me, Isabel, I had moved to Toronto just before I'd left because for international business it was a better potential for me. And he says, I'm from Toronto. If you call this company and ask for me, I'm the chairman, so I'll help you out. So when I came back to Canada, I think it was a month after I finished a pilgrimage, I felt quite lost because if you've walked the pilgrimage, you're at such a slow speed that your concept of time, your concept of being present, your concept of connecting with those completely different. So new city, new people, different speed, I could not connect. So I was thinking, it's okay, I'll call Ken and we can have a chat. So I had a chat with him and I said that I fell in love with silence and I really enjoy when my mind is very peaceful. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, I know someone who does meditation. I'm not interested myself, but I think he can help you. And so one meet another, and he happened to be a Raj Yogi. And when I met with him, I actually felt that he had a bit too much of this, to say nothing else. I thought, wow, yogi, I was expecting, you know, the beard and, you know, the orange robe, but it wasn't the case. And I thought he had a bit too much self-confidence. But what happened is that if you've experienced this, he was soul conscious, looking at me as a soul, so his eyes pierced right through. And I was stunned. I said, gosh, I found someone that can see right through my games, my masks, my story. I think I found the teacher. It took 1 month to call him back because I was scared, basically. And when I started the course, what it revealed about this and the meditation was very powerful. It really felt as if I was coming up from under a thick layer of earth, like, and breathing again, living again. I felt seen, I felt heard, I felt encouraged, I felt trusted, I felt respected. All the things that we are really looking for. And so I carried on, and now it's been 20 years. It's been 20 years. It's the same practice in the morning. When you go to sleep, the intellect goes to sleep. You know the difference between the mind and the intellect? Do you? Maybe? Maybe not. No? Yes? No, I should say, right? Okay. So you have the soul, which is the powerhouse, the energy, and the soul expresses itself in the space that we call the mind. Yeah, the space like here. And that's where you think and feel when you're healthy as a soul. But when you forget that you're a soul, emotions come also in the mind, and the waste and thoughts and the reactions and all of this, so that the memories and things that you're ashamed of and all of this is in the mind, the subconscious or the conscious mind. And the intellect is the part of the soul that allows you to focus. Now, when your concentration is with me, it's your intellect. And when you focus on me, you allow what I'm saying to come into your mind. You make a, you know, check it out and say, don't agree, or yes, come in, or not so sure, but the intellect is like the one that will make those choices, hold the knowledge, focus, and makes choices. When you meditate, you need a strong intellect. When you go to sleep at night, it goes to sleep. Right? What emerges? What's in your subconscious mind comes in place, and you can have coherent dreams. I don't have coherent dreams. And it comes and plays. And in the morning, when you wake up, it's good to take the time to see the soul, to allow it to just shine, so that in your mind there's something new, something fresh, something beautiful, something pure. And then that capacity to hold that experience will be your intellect. We also study after we've had our morning meditation, and when you study is the intellect, right? The intellect that can focus, learn, read, and make choices. So to meditate and to read something of quality, value for the self in the morning is the best way to start the day, the absolutely best way to start the day. And so whatever we do during the day as yogis, so when I was meeting a group on Tuesday, someone said that there's such a craze these days about happiness that some people put too much pressure to be always happy. And I agree, you shouldn't put too much pressure. And if you fail or fall, it's okay. If you keep the attitude of learning, and then come back up, dust yourself off, don't carry guilt and shame, learn and keep going, you will be just like a yogi, putting yourself first. Now, the difference between someone who doesn't have a practice of meditation and self-reflection and someone who does is that it's like walking on a tightrope. If I walk on a tightrope and I have no practice, I may fall, and I'll stay in the mud, and I'll talk to all my friends about the mud and who pushed me in the mud, because it must be someone else's fault. And when everybody says, for you, then I might at one point says, okay, enough, and then come back on the tightrope. As a yogi, we'll fall also, but we may not stay in the mud as long. We might, for some of us, have humor and laugh and say, okay, that was not quite right, but still learn, realize, learn, transform, and go back on the tightrope. That's the only difference. So your happiness is to remain happy as my aim, but not because you like me, love me, validate me, make me feel useful and beautiful and valuable, but because I'm learning and I value myself and I know myself. And I make my life worth living because there is love, because it comes from me and I share it with you. Can you see the difference? Independence in relationship is about taking responsibility for yourself. Right? Any questions? Comments? You might agree, not agree, and that's okay. You might have psychologists in the room and they might say, she's quite off on that, and that's okay, tell me. I'm speaking from my experience and some of the studies that I've read and what I experiment with. But my happiness of 20 years ago and my happiness of today is quite different. Should we do a short exercise? It's not an exercise of meditation. I want you to think of one of the activities that you love doing the most. Right? So in your mind, think of one of the things you love most doing. And you may not have done it for 10 years. You may not have done it for 20 years. And you know who you are, no? Think of one thing that you love doing. Now, ask yourself, how do you feel when you're doing that activity? How do you feel when you're doing that activity? Think of three things. Yeah? Now, anyone would like to share what they love doing? Anyone would like to share what they love doing? Yes?
I love hiking.
Hiking?
In Greenland, where I'm from.
Yes? And how does it make you feel when you hike?
Free.
Free.
And peaceful.
Yes.
And strong.
Yes. Well done. So, free, peaceful, strong. Someone else? What do you love doing?
I loved skiing.
Oh, downhill skiing.
Yes. And also,
cross-country skiing.
But mostly this, and it made me, I was so happy.
Yes.
And felt so free.
Yes.
And was so content.
Yeah.
It just felt one. Everything was...
Yeah, one with nature.
Yes.
Yeah. Someone else? What do you love doing? Anyone? No? Yes.
Cycling,
yeah. Mm-hmm. Where does it make you feel?
I like to see things, something new.
Yes.
And the smells.
Yes.
And then the activity of exercising.
Yes. How do you feel when you see things that are new?
I just like to see new things all the time. It's a nice feeling.
What type of feeling?
Happy.
Yes. Right? I love skiing as well. I love dancing also. But that has stopped a long time ago. Anyway, but skiing in Quebec, you drive 20 minutes and you're on the ski slopes.
Ooh.
Yes. So after work, I wouldn't go to the meditation center. I didn't know the meditation center. I would take my skis and go on the slopes. And the best skiing, one of the best skiing in Eastern Canada, was 1 hour and 10 minutes. When I moved to Toronto, when I moved to London, when I came to Denmark,
yeah.
I'm joking. But I asked myself the question, how do I feel when I go skiing? And when you go skiing, you're completely in the moment. You have to, otherwise watch out,
yeah.
Right? You're in the moment. You need to know how to read the slope fast. You need a bit of courage, right?
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you're breaking all the time. And at the end, the feeling at the end of the slope, right? The feeling of power, feeling of being alive, right? So, was I going to complain about life and my destiny, saying, I can't go skiing, Toronto's boring, London is too expensive? I could find many things to say because I can't go skiing, right? I should go into do service because my life is, yeah, surrendered life. I should go and do service in Switzerland, right? I'm much more valuable there. But not. But I tuned in to those feelings and I realized that there are other activities that I can do, and through my meditation I could generate those things. So if I build my inner confidence in the morning and I need to teach, speak to a group, deliver something new, look and into what I really think and convey that to people clearly, all of that makes me very present. I need courage, and when I finish, I feel. So you can see that I've understood why, and now I've owned it. Right? And so I don't complain that I don't have enough time to do the things that I love. And it took me a while. I was depressed in Toronto. I was thinking, why am I in Toronto? Right? But when I understood and I put myself in positions where I had to be courageous and alive and present, then it kind of cooled down. I felt that I was taking back control over my life. Independence is feeling that you're in control over your life and you take also responsibility for your actions, your happiness. Right? That's the type of independence that I'm calling. I'm not calling for talking about independence where I don't care and you and me, sorry, we're separate. No. But I'm with you and together we face the world and contribute, rather than you help me first. And when I'm in a good mood, then we can share with others. Yeah? A little bit like that I was before I started to meditate. So, the other thing about this exercise is that we all have things that are different, okay? The three of us had similar things, but some other people might say they love to read and things that really brings peace into their minds, and that's also okay. For me, is happiness and courage is very important, and I see happiness when I share what I know and understand with others. And courage is doing new things in a different way all the time. And so for you, it's different, so your path is different, right?
Mm-hmm.
So meditation is not about all becoming peaceful, and that's it. I would not be here.
Mm-hmm.
Courage and happiness is really important to me. Can you get this? Is that sometimes, you know, you look at, now self-respect's not here anymore, but remember, self-respect, self-esteem, self-confidence. Self-respect is I am a little bit different. We're all a little bit different. And for me to feel alive, I need to be with people and share. You know, feel that my heart is open and share. And so I need to nourish that. So my discipline with my daily routine is feeling that I'm learning and I'm growing and I'm expanding, that I'm more and more myself. And so when I come with you, I feel more authentic. I feel present. When we don't, it's as if two cars meet, but the drivers never meet. Have you ever had that feeling of being with other people, but you don't know them? You don't really see them? Right? It's like the cars meet, but the drivers never meet. So my the challenge that I give myself is that I am present when I meet you. And that gives me a similar feeling than what I was naturally drawn to as a child, which was skiing. Is that? So that's why I ask you what you love doing, because it'll give you your entry point into meditation, I think. And if your meditation is only about peace and what you love is to feel alive and feel powerful, you might give up meditation. Can you see? You say, it's okay, but let's get on with life. Right? So if your meditation allows you to gain a sense of contentment, so that when you are in the world, you can do things that bring you that sense of being alive, then that's great. See that whole equation. Is that? Yeah?
Yeah.
You can also feel alive when you meditate. Yes?
Can you become codependent on meditation?
What do you mean?
Well, I'm thinking now that you said there's this, like, okay, I'm getting this feeling from meditation. I'm really drawn to this. I want to meditate all the time to get this feeling. And, well, it's a thin line, isn't it? Where you just want to do it all the time because it fills you up with something in a habitual way, or like you're dependent on it to feel in a certain way. But also I get that meditation also fills you up in a natural way.
Yeah.
It's just like, what is your perspective on the codependency?
Oh, that's a good point. Meditation for us is about cultivating self-awareness. So when I do it in the morning, it's as if I set myself right. But during the day, I try to keep it. Right? So it's not only when I sit down that I feel those things. When I sit down, it's like I initiate it. And then I walk into life, sustaining it. And when I lose it, then I may need to stop and recharge and reset. But it's not only when I sit in meditation that I feel it. It's just the initiation of it, if you see. But a yogi in itself doesn't really need to sit down. Yoga for us means to connect. So to reconnect with myself and what we call is soul consciousness. So you're sitting on the seat of the soul and you think, you speak, and you act. So when you meditate in the morning, it's just kind of, you know, setting yourself, you know, and maybe nourishing, you know, healing something or going into more depths. But walking in your life, I continue feeling it. And if you become addicted to yourself, it's pretty okay. The important thing is that you, you feel more and more centered and authentic, but not only when you're sitting. Raj yoga, so Raj, it means royal, means real, and yoga, so reconnecting with the real self. I can connect with you in a real way through that soul conscious vision. And I can connect and we see God, but that's not the topic of this meditation, this talk. But we see God as another soul, but a soul that has never lost track, that has completely pure self-respect, self-esteem, and self-confidence. He doesn't need anything from anyone. And therefore, he's pure and forever giving, just like a rose, like a fragrant, powerful rose. And so if you want to remember what it feels like to come in a relationship with someone that doesn't need anything from you, then that relationship is very valuable. And if I ask, how many of you love to go for a walk in nature? Most of you, right? Why do you think we love to go for a walk in nature? Why is it?
Connecting with God.
Hmm?
Connecting with the higher soul.
Some people might, but most people don't. What is it about going into nature? We all love it.
Mm.
How do we feel we're in nature? Yeah.
Because it's all alive.
It's
all living.
It's all alive. It's all living. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the answer is within living. But if I say to you, define living for me, you might just say it's, you know, it's breathing and it's growing, but there's something else. There's something else about living. Something else about nature. Now, if you walk in nature, and if you good hair day or a bad hair day, are the roses turning around? That you see them or you ignore them? Will they go, right? That you stumble on them or you don't? It doesn't care, but not in the wrong way. Nature will give no matter what. It's the only place in the world today where the soul experiences this. When we're with human beings, when we're at work, in our family, sometimes when we're alone, but especially when we walk on the high street, they want something from us. If it's not our money, it's our attention. If it's not our attention, it's our validation, whatever, right? There's always a want or a need. And if you don't do it properly, I don't give you what you want, right? But you go in nature and you forget all of this. Good hair day, bad hair day, respect, no respect. I know you, I don't even know your name, right? I can't tell you the name of the plants and the flowers when I, or even the trees. Doesn't matter, it keeps giving. And living, within the definition of living for a Raj Yogi, within that is giving.
Mm.
We're alive to give. Sounds good?
Mm.
So, should we have a meditation? Yeah? We have to stop, finish?
We just open the window a little bit.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah, because it's a bit hot in here.
Hot and steamy. We've been working hard.
Yeah. And you can have a glass of water if you want.
Okay. So the first exercise that we will do won't look like or sound like a meditation to you, but
you want music or
not for now? But it's to actually kind of agree on what is important, this important ingredient for meditation. So that sounds okay?
Yeah.
So sit comfortably in a disciplined position so you don't develop a backache or fall asleep. And for this meditation, I'll just ask you to either close your eyes or find a point of focus. And I want you to go back into your kitchen. However you left it today, or yesterday, you are in your kitchen now. And I want you to go to the fridge and put your hand on the handle. What does the handle feel like? Is it round, straight, cold, not, whatever? Now, open the door of the fridge. And wherever you usually put your fruit, you can see some lemons. Imagine that you see some lemons. How many do you see? Now take two of them. Take two lemons and shut the fridge door and put those lemons on your cutting board. Take your favorite knife and cut those lemons in half. Now, however you usually extract the juice from lemons, take that apparatus now. and extract the juice from those lemon halves. Extract every single milliliter of juice that there is. Now pour everything in a glass and hold that glass in front of your eyes and see how much juice you have, what color it has, if there is pulp or no pulp. See how much juice there is, and now I want you to drink everything and taste it. And notice if your mouth is reacting. Now, come back into the center and tell me by raising your hand, how many of you were able to taste the lemon? Or the mouth started to kind of water a little bit? So obviously there was no lemons, right? There's no lemons. Why do you think you were able to taste the lemon?
Because I know how it tastes.
Yeah, so you can remember what it tastes like. Number one.
I could see the color.
You can see it, okay. What else? Why were you able to taste it?
Because it's a strong taste.
Yes. So you remember that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still at one. Yes?
The smell.
Smell, okay. Mm-hmm. That's still because you've had the experience of it before, right? What's the other reason?
You have to tell us.
You had to?
You have to tell us.
You have to, yes, maybe.
Being home.
Hmm?
Is it being home?
Being home? Yeah, it was your kitchen, right? Some people giggle, so it might have been left in a mess. Yes.
I remember.
Sensorial memory. So yes. Yeah, memory.
The nature is giving.
Sorry?
The nature is giving.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So it's your experience, right, of
yes.
This. But the second reason why you were able to, and that's really important for meditation, is that you engaged with the thought.
Mm-hmm.
I could have said to you, taste it, and you say, it's pretty noisy outside, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
What time is it now? You know, you could have been somewhere else. So you were focused and engaged, right?
Yeah.
You came with me. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because when you meditate, often people say, oh, it was scary. You know, I've never experienced something like that. In meditation, we will not make you experience something that you haven't experienced before. And we'll go in the very dangerous territory of peace, love, eternity, right? And then, so you've had that before, right? It may not have a color or a smell, but, you know, we've experienced that before. And you need to engage with it. So sometimes people feel that in meditation, if you want to experience peace, it's as if I'm really, really still and I wait for the wave of peace to come over me. Yeah. Nah. You need to think and be that thought. If you only think, it won't give you anything. But if you engage with it, so if I say, I am a being of joy, you can say it in your mind now, and just like words come by, or you can say it and engage your heart, right? I am a being of joy. Can you feel the difference? So in meditation, that's what we need to do. There's other ingredients, but those are the two main ones. Should we try a meditation? A real one? And it's not in your kitchen, not in your bed. How long do we have? 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so sit comfortably.
You want music now?
Yeah, music would be good.
Yeah.
And now you've got the point. Okay, so you've got your point of focus, and I encourage you to use it. So keep your eyes open if you can, so that it becomes natural for you to come into a different awareness as you have your eyes open and you walk and move around. Yeah? So that's an easy point of focus. And I want you to rest your eyes on that point of focus, just like a bird on the branch. No need to stare. If you need to blink your eyes, that's okay. You're just seeing the point of light. And you allow your body to really relax into the chair or the seat on the floor. And find a place of stillness that is comfortable. Now, without moving your eyes, I'll ask you to see what else you can see through your eyes. And of course, without moving your eyes, you can see Isabel in the flip chart, the speaker, the ceiling, your own body, the body of those around you. Without moving your eyes, you realize that you can see so much. But for the purpose of this meditation, just accept things just the way they are and let them be. Be content to be focusing on a point of light. Now, notice what you can hear through your ears. We can hear the music and the traffic outside. Someone's phone may go off. You may hear your own breathing or the breathing of those around you, and that's okay. We're not asking the world to stop so that we can meditate. And just accept and let the sound flow. Let them come and let them go. Now bring your attention inside to that space behind the eyes that we call the mind. That is your personal space. And that space may be filled with so many thoughts, memories, images, new things, old things. Sadness, joy, whatever. It's okay, whatever's in there is in there. But for the purpose of the meditation, I invite you to transform that space. And transform it into a big theater, a live theater. The one with the live actors in them. And you see yourself on the stage, and around you is everyone that you know. You see your parents, that they're alive or not, children if you have, friends, brothers, sisters if you have, co-workers, neighbors. You see everyone around you. And you have a different relationship with each of them. And that's okay. Now in front of you, you see a button. And that's your chance. When you press that button, everything will go on pause. Everything will become still. And it will be your chance to withdraw into stillness. So now, press the button and feel as if everything around you is so still now. Everyone on the stage is like a living statue. And you are still moving, and you can move. And you make your way backstage to that room where the actors remove their costume, let go of their roles, remove their masks and makeup, to become the actor again. Remove the masks and the roles of the brother, the sister, the friend, the colleague, the helper. Remove all of those. You are the actor, not the roles, and definitely not the story. Now you've removed all of those, and you make your way to the back door of the theater. You put your hand on the handle, and as soon as you open the door, there's so much light that comes through. You step out and you're surrounded with so much light, as if it was the brightest sunny day. It's warm, it's safe. It's an open and beautiful space. Now someone comes to you, seems like a child. Looking at you, you ask, "But who are you?" What do you answer the child? Now whatever you said, he's happy. And he leaves. And as you look around that sunny space, you realize that on your right, there's a huge mirror. I mean, very big. Very clear mirror. And when you come closer, you realize that apart from the light all around you, what you see is yourself. What do you look like? Without your masks, without your costumes, without your story. You realize that you actually have no legs. You don't have any arms, any body. You don't have shoulders, you don't have a neck. You don't have a face even. You don't have eyes or ears. There's nothing physical about you. What do you see in front of you in the mirror? The one that thinks and the one that feels. The one that is peace and is love is non-physical. It is living and it is giving, but it's not physical. What do you see? What you actually see is a tiny star of light. Consciousness. And the light all around you is your light. And your light is not limited by the space of your head, because your head is physical. Your light, your presence, can be as big as the room. Now, close your eyes and notice how you feel. And I'm not asking the question to your physical heart, I'm asking the question to you, the self, the soul. The most important thing in meditation is to become self-aware, to be present, to be me.
because I cannot be more beautiful and more authentic, more powerful than to be myself. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes again and rest them on the point of light in front of you. And notice how you feel in relation to your body now. Notice your presence. And if you had two words to describe how you feel, what would they be? Now, come back to here and now, in the room with all of us. How do you feel? Or how does some of you feel? Anyone wants to share? Yes.
I felt really focused and clear, and it was funny because last night I think I couldn't sleep. I got like 3 hours of sleep. So I was thinking meditation, I'm going to fall asleep. But it actually had the opposite effect after I closed my eyes and opened them again. Everything was so much more clear and focused. Mm. That was funny.
And how do you feel? So awake.
Awake.
Present.
Focused and clear was the two words.
They came to your mind, right? Focus and clear, which are usually, they come from peace. Anyone else? No one angry with me when I said you've got no legs, no arms? When I said, you know, leave all your friends and family behind? That was okay?
Yes.
We can do that, right? What did you say to the child?
I am me.
I am me. Mm. Most of you said that?
Mm.
Interesting. And the child would understand that. You say, okay, cool. I'm going to go. You don't need to pretend, right? And so when I said you've got nothing physical, could you still feel your presence? And when I invited you to see an image, which is the soul, how did that feel?
Very good.
And if you were to unwrap, very good. Very good. Is there a feeling of security? There's nowhere else to go. Is there a feeling of contentment? You know, very good can mean so many things. Mm-hmm. I'm worth it. I'm beautiful. You know, very good. What do you feel?
Clarity. At home?
Yeah, at home.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's a good feeling. Imagine the quality of your thoughts after you have such an experience. And as you know, your thoughts become your words. Your words become your actions. Your actions become your habits. Your habits become your personality. And your personality defines your destiny. Where does it start?
Mm-hmm.
Or the thoughts, and who creates the thoughts?
I do.
I do. So I encourage you to have meditation in the morning before you enter the world and join the army of those who want to give and feel one with nature, because we become the same, giving selflessly, the most beautiful part of us. Sounds good?
Yeah.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Lisa, thank you.
We say thank you, Isabel. It was really great. Thank you. We recorded this talk, and we'll put it up on the web. So I'll send the link to all of you in a few days. So that's good. Yeah.
This is fair.
And I think if someone wants to ask you, maybe Isabel hangs around for a few minutes. And we have a talk next Friday. You mentioned nature here a bit, and We have a talk next Friday evening here in the center. Mm-hmm. There's three of us who are engaged with environment, with leadership, with different communication models. Förbundet för en fälles framtid. Det är Bettina, Karsten och mig själv. Vi lever en dialog omkring det, och den inre dialog och den yre dialog i förbindelse med miljö. Så det ska ni vara välkomna till. Plaketten hänger på uppslagstavlan där uppe. Och så har jag gravat fram några gamla blöd, retreatblöd som har sagt upp på hyllan till 10 kronor styck. Sådana gamla artiklar. Jag är i gang med att rydda upp i skäpena och finna sådana guldkorn från gamla dagar. Så istället för att vi gömmer dem i skäpena så kommer de upp på hyllan. Så det kan ni kika på. Yes. Jag glömde, I forgot to mention, sorry Isabel, but you know Isabel, she lives in the Global Retreat Center, which is in Oxford. How many of you have been to Oxford? Oh, okay. You've been to Oxford? Hey, yes. So she's been lived there and teaches and do workshops and seminars and many other things for 2 years now. Global Retreat Center has a big space in many people's heart here. So that's nice. All right, I say thank you, and another time thank you to you, and so I'll see you 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. She's here 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. She will be here
4 o'clock.
No, 4 o'clock. Okay, good night. Thank you.
Thank you.